was in our living room. Vree's dog missed the deadline. Totally true.
Davis, I talked to Baylor. Have you seen him? Have you talked to him?
No, I said. Another true answer. I hadn't seen or talked to Baylor, and I didn't want to see or talk to him. Fantasy and I had spent years teaching Baylor everything we knew, and now all he did was use it against us. Baylor would take one look at us and know we had the oil sheik's dog. Why? I asked Bradley, knowing why. If no hair hadn't told him there'd been a dog napping, Baylor would have. This was it. My marriage would soon be over.
Because they're running in circles, Bradley said. There are dogs all over the property, including a missing dog surveillance can't find, and between the missing dog and the dog show, I've taken no less than 10 dog calls. I don't know how I let marketing talk me into a dog show at the Bellissimo, but I can tell you this, Davis. It will be item number one in my exit interview. Don't let a dog in the door. Not only the dogs,
he said.
A couple checked in yesterday.
What did a couple checking in have to do with anything? Where was he going with this? Hundreds of couples checked in every day. And? He sneezed again.
Hold on.
I heard two distant sneezes. The first faraway sneeze made me wonder why he was sneezing. Bradley never sneezed. The second one gave me the split second I needed to jump through the safe subject window he'd opened. I blessed him two more times, then said, "A couple checked in."
Jeremy keeps calling them schmucks.
No hair divided casino guests into one of three categories: lucky ducks, cat ladies, or drunks. Schmucks was a new one.
Davis, these people are raising hell all over the casino. Have you seen the incident report?
The incident report listed, well, casino incidents. Disturbances, underage gambling, medical emergencies, security threats, and I hadn't looked at it in months.
Apparently they had reservations, a room for themselves and a room for their bodyguards.
We have guests who brought bodyguards? I asked. Who?
Schmucks. Other than that, I have no idea who,
he said.
But after raising hell at the front desk, they ended up in a Magnolia Suite.
Magnolia Suites, of which there were six on the 27th floor, had four bedrooms, indoor pools, and private poker rooms. Serious gamblers who had $2,500 a night to blow on a hotel room stayed in Magnolia Suites. The schmucks causing trouble were either serious poker players, super rich, or they'd raised so much hell checking in. The only way to appease them was to put them in a Magnolia.
The guests have been there a day,
Bradley said.
Maintenance has had to repair two walls, replace a room of carpet, and the police have been called three times, that I know of. No telling what Jeremy and Baylor aren't telling me.
Why the police? Honestly, I didn't care why. I took it for what it was. Nohair and Baylor were busy, which was very good news for me.
One of the calls was for indecent exposure.
He sneezed.
I don't have any other details.
He sneezed again. Bradley, is it dusty there?
No,
he said.
Why?
Why are you sneezing?
I have no idea. Where was I?
Schmucks and details?
Right,
he said.
I don't have details, and I don't want them. Davis, I'm tired of the details. Keep Bex and Quinn as far away from the public venues as you can until Jeremy and Baylor take care of the schmucks.
I won't let the girls out of my sight, Bradley. When the whole story came out, and it would, Bradley would remind me of this conversation. The conversation in which I could have told him about Meredith, about Gully and Green and Bootsy, about Princess and Harley, not to mention the dead woman in Fantasy's bonus room, and didn't.
"Tell me about judging the show," he said. "Then I need to let you go."
I used my sleeve to mop my brow. There was no air in the pantry. The dogs marched around the ring in a circle, then stopped at the judges' table to give us dirty looks, and we gave them points.
For?
Presentation? But I wasn't really sure what they were presenting.
How did you delegate points?
Bianca, I said. She was watching closed circuit, and she texted, "That one is hideous, David. It looks like a monkey. 0 points.
Bex and Quinn were where?
He asked. In the front row, with Vree. Bradley, I wish you could have seen what Bianca had me wearing.
I did.
How?
You're on the front page of the Life section in USA Today.
Surely not.
What was up with the hat?
I didn't have time to go blonde.
Ah.
Tell me about Nashville.
It's beautiful. The new SGF offices are in a part of town called the Gulch, between downtown and Music Row. I wish you could see.
He sneezed again. What was up with all the sneezing? Are you coming down with something?
No.
He sneezed again.
I feel great. It would be hard to be in this city and not feel great.
He was still on his Nashville kick, planning his exit interview already, just as I was beginning to think we'd need to be farther from Biloxi than Nashville. We would need to move to Tibet, or Niue, or Point Nemo, the oceanic pole of inaccessibility. We split up at 10 till 10, Monday morning. Fantasy walked Bexley and Quinn to July on the 25th floor. Vree went on dog patrol, and I, in tweeds, riding boots, and a black felt derby, perched side saddle on my Bianca blonde ponytail, judged the obstacle course round of the dog show. Arriving 2 minutes early for the second round of competition, I took one of the minutes to see what I'd missed in my haze of trauma the night before. The ballroom, the center of the conference facilities, was directly above the casino. Other than the massive crystal chandeliers, everything else had been dogged. The competition ring colors were Mardi Gras, green turf, purple stages and gold boxes identifying the different breeds, Neapolitan Mastiff, Newfoundland Labrador, Boykin Spaniel, and several more boxes touting dog breeds I'd never heard of and had no chance of recognizing. It's a good thing they wore numbers. The ring was fenced in, surrounded by spectator bleachers, and the overwhelming smell was that of buttered popcorn. I spent the second minute before the first dog jumped and jogged around the obstacle course, talking to Bianca. I rolled my eyes as I answered my clone phone. "Good morning, Bianca."
"David, take my hair down or twist it into a chignon. I look like I'm in eighth grade."
She must have thought about what she said and decided looking like she was in eighth grade wasn't all bad, because she followed with,
"On second thought, I'll let it go this one time, but cross your ankles, not your legs. How many times do we need to go over this?"
I spotted the closed-circuit cameras as the announcer stepped up to the podium.
"Gotta scoot, Bianca."
I muted my phone. The dogs did their thing for almost an hour. I thought I'd lose my mind for 59 minutes of it. The split second I entered the last score for the last hurdle, I slipped out the back, then ducked and dodged my way from the convention center to my office, where Fantasy was ticking items off our to-do list. She put her pen down and said,
"You look ridiculous."
"Thank you." Her, with the lips the day before, I hadn't said a word.
She was in my chair, so I sat down to the unfamiliar view from the other side of my desk. Where are we?
I tried operations, maintenance, and engineering. No one has seen the housekeepers, and that's not the bad news.
It was plenty bad. Where had Bootsy stashed those men?
No hair called,
she said. Three phones were lined up between us. My uncloned phone, Bootsy's, and Fantasy's. She said no hair had called her phone, and when she didn't answer, he dialed mine.
Why?
I pulled the derby off and sailed it.
What'd he want? He wanted to know why I didn't answer my own phone but answered yours.
What'd you say? I loosened the ascot, choking me.
I said, no hair, what do you want?
And?
He wants us to find the oil sheik's missing dog.
She pointed in the general direction of next door.
He said someone in the Leno suite called for a limo to drive the caregiver and Harley to the dog beach, which explains why they were in my neighborhood. But the caregiver and the dog never showed up for the limo, so we don't know how they ended up in my neighborhood. Then he said if we didn't find the missing dog in the next 30 minutes, we need to sit down with the oil man and look at security footage.
How long ago was that? I asked.
Right after you left.
I left an hour earlier. Our 30 minutes were up 30 minutes ago. How are we supposed to look at security footage with a blind man?
I asked the same question and No Hair said stop being cute.
We can't.
Right? And why would we want to? What's left after cute?
I wrestled out of the tweed jacket. We brought Harley in through the back door and up the freight elevator. No security cameras, there's nothing to see.
And why us? Why can't Baylor look at nothing on security footage with the blind oil man? No Hare's busy being Bradley because Bradley's out of town. Baylor's busy being No Hair because No Hare's busy being Bradley. And both are busy chasing schmucks in the casino.
Bradley mentioned schmucks in the casino when he called this morning.
There are always schmucks in the casino.
She waved it off.
No Hair wants to know what we're busy doing because someone needs to find the oil man's dog. He said they needed help and for us to get off our lazy butts and help.
I searched for buttons through the ruffles of the blouse I was wearing.
Are you going to strip, Davis?
Did you tell him you're busy with the Hair of the Dog tournament and I'm busy with two little girls and judging the dog show?
He hung up on me before I could. He said, get to work, then click.
She took a deep breath, then clasped her hands on my desk. She leaned in.
There's one more thing.
We didn't need one more thing. We needed three or four less things.
He wants one of us to,
she used air quotes,
stop watching soap operas and eating bonbons long enough to take Cage at four.
My hunt for lost buttons in the sea of ruffles on my horse blouse ended. If one of us needed to take Cage at four, it meant it was still Monday, which sounded impossible, but if someone had to take Cage, it was indeed one of the longest days of my life, and still Monday. Monday meant the Cage audit where one of us, No Hair, Baylor, Fantasy, or me, oversaw the transfer of the weekend's casino cash haul to the vault. Usually we drew straws because no one really wanted to be in the windowless basement count room alone for an hour counting stacks of money, then verifying the count and signing off it, it being tens of millions of dollars. If one of the $1 million were to, say, be misplaced, It wouldn't be caught until another one of us took Cage the next Monday, at which point Green Gully's blood business would be completed, and my sister would be home. Between one Monday's cage count and the next, a misplaced million could be replaced. Fantasy, in her navy blue security blazer, left for round two of the Dog Day slot tournament at 11:15. I picked up the house phone and dialed the Leno suite. The Sheik's secretary answered. I identified myself as a Bellissimo internal security operative, then set up an appointment for one of my co-workers and me to go over security footage with the oil sheik at 3 o'clock. If you don't mind me asking, how will this go?
What do you mean?
How will we watch surveillance video with a man who can't see?
You'll be surprised at His Excellency Alabasov's skills,
the secretary said. I'd been surprised enough in the past 2 days to last the rest of my life, thank you very much. His what?
30% of our brains are devoted to vision,
he said.
From birth, His Excellency has redirected his untapped visual cortex function to his other senses. He can smell a lie, he can hear you blink, he can source a wine to its geographical origin by tasting a drop. He's more than capable of processing what you describe. Without his dog, though, he's bumping into walls. He needs the dog. We'll see you at 3.
Which gave me a few good hours to check in with my sister, track Bootsy the Witch, and make some kind of, any kind of, progress with the dead problem in Fantasy's bonus room. How long should we plan on meeting with Mr. Alabasov? I asked.
Address him as His Excellency.
Sure thing.
And I've scheduled you for 50 minutes until 3:50.
Which would free me up to take Cage at 4, if I were so inclined. Then Vree's smiling face filled my office door.
Davis!
She was more than smiling. She was beaming. And she wasn't alone. Leverett Orlean, M.D., Pineapple, Alabama's resident physician, was with her, wearing one of his signature seersucker suits, slack bow tie, and exhausted wingtips. He looked like Albert Einstein, smelled like Sunday morning at the frat house, and had a wide, smug smirk on his face. He was absent-mindedly scratching his chest.
Hi, Davis. Long time no see. Vree says you need my help with a stiffy.
Excuse me? He said.
A stiffy. Cadaver. Carcass. Dearly departed.
In as far as how much trouble I could potentially be in with my marriage, my job, and felony theft charges when I waylaid $1 million during the cage count that afternoon, which would land me in the pokey for years to come. Heaviest on my heart, with my sister as safe as she could be for the time being, was the dead body at Fantasy's. And not so much that we walked off and left her there. At the time, it was our only option. But the fact that the woman who looked like Mrs. Doubtfire had to have a family somewhere. Was there a husband pacing a floor? Probably not. Who would leave a husband to live and travel with a blind oil baron to take care of his dog? What about children? She had to have children. At her age, they'd be grown, which meant we walked off and left someone's dead mother in an easy chair. And what if her children had children? The dead woman could have grandbabies who adored her, or a sister. She, like me, might have a sister with whom she shared a bond like no other. So, as sorry as I was to see Orlean, the quackiest of all quacks to ever take the Hippocratic Oath, and I was so sorry to see him, even I had to admit he was my best option. Leverett Orlean could tell the story all day long and no one would believe him. The dead woman needed my help. She deserved it. Those two truths pulled me up from my desk. My limbs felt leaden. It was 11:30. I had a meeting with His Excellency at 3 and the cage count at 4, which left plenty of time to get to fantasies with Earlene the idiot. I said, "Let me change clothes." The horse clothes were killing me. 13. The talented team of designers and installers from the Bellissimo Theater Department had turned the conference center slot tournament room into a doghouse. Because of the proprietary nature of the game inside, cell service was blocked. To talk to Fantasy, I either had to call on the security channel of the casino's two-way radio system and let everyone else in security listen in, or walk in the dog door. Earlene and I walked in the door of the Hair of the Dog slot tournament under the pitched roof of a massive redwood doghouse. Directly above our heads was a crooked white sign with hand-painted letters. Fido. The lowercase I was dotted with a paw print. Earlene made a beeline for the open bar to our right. I caught him by the back of his wrinkled jacket. "What's wrong with you?"
"A little libation is just what the doctor ordered, and I'm the doctor."
I gave him a shove away from the bar, where the bartenders were wearing furry dog ear hats, and the drinks were being served in stemmed glass dog bowls. Just past the bar was a gated fence with a security guard dressed as a dog catcher.
"Your badge?"
Earlene puffed up.
"I'm a doctor." "So?"
the security suit said.
"Where's your badge? This is a private event." "I'm a private doctor."
"You need a badge, private doctor." I peeked over the Balenciaga sunglasses covering half my face.
"Mrs. Cole."
The dog catcher recognized me.
"Welcome."
I grabbed Earlene by the seersuckered sleeve. "Come on." The first year Bradley and I were married, we kept my identity secret. We tried to, anyway. I worked undercover, and the best way to blow that cover would have been to walk around on Bradley's arm, waving my wedding band. It wasn't long, a year maybe, until our marriage was the worst-kept secret throughout the 3 million square feet of Bellissimo property. When a graveyard shift of blackjack dealers took it to the next level, the payout on their is-he-or-isn't-he pool topping $5,000, one of the dealers, wanting his ex-wife off his back for unpaid child support, laid in wait behind a giant shiflera tree in our vestibule, then snapped a picture of a welcome home kiss Bradley and I shared just inside the open front door of our private residence on the 29th floor. The problem was, at the time, I'd just finished a round of Bianca Sanders duty. I was temporarily blonde, green-eyed, and head-to-toe Givenchy. So the blackjack dealer took and distributed a picture of what looked like the casino president sharing a sloppy kiss with the owner's wife. At which point, we had to come clean. Bellissimo President Bradley Cole was indeed married to a woman who did, eerily, favor Bianca Sanders. The blackjack dealer won the $5,000 pool, but lost his job before he could be fired for using such poor judgment when he was arrested for failure to pay the back child support. The photograph floated around for months. By then, I was pregnant with the girls, and present day, most of the Bellissimo knew Mr. Cole was married to the seldom-seen mother of the twin girls, who were often seen with him on Saturdays, and that his wife looked a lot like the mean woman who lived in the penthouse. I was no longer the lead story in the employee break room, but still, I didn't parade around the property toting a boss's wife sign. I hid under a hat or behind sunglasses when I went out my front door. Like then, as soon as security recognized me and let us in the fence,
I was back behind my sunglasses and being barked at. I loved slot machines, and I loved tournament slot machines the best. Rather than the usual cherries, diamonds, and flaming sevens, tournament machines were themed heavily. Inside the doghouse were two rows of 25 gigantic bone-shaped double dog dare slot machines, every seat I could see occupied, and every machine barking as the players tried to line up the dogs by breed. A lady directly in front of us was playing the bonus round, Puppy Love. She was tapping the screen, selecting from a sea of dog biscuits that flipped to reveal fire hydrants, tennis balls, postal carriers, and diamond collars. Four diamond collars paid $5,000. I watched until she turned over four ripped, panted mailmen, winning $1,000. Someone tapped me on the shoulder. The someone was Fantasy. Davis! Erlene, a drama king to begin with, took one look at Fantasy and clutched his heart. His mouth dropped open. He took a dramatic step back. He used his best game show host voice.
You are the most beautiful creature on God's green planet. I adore you. You're Venus and Serena without the bulk. You're Rihanna without the umbrella, Ella, Ella. You're Diana Ross without the Supremes. May I please examine you?
Fantasy, this is Erlene.
Dr. Erlene.
He reached for her hand. She jerked it away. Erlene wasn't discouraged. He straightened his bow tie, then swept into a low bow. He rose slowly, looked into her eyes, and said,
I'll have you know I completed my gynecological residency at the top of my class, and I'd surrender my substantial wealth to see your fallopian tubes up close and personal. Scoop down just a little more.
Take a step back, fool! Fantasy kicked him in the shin. You're disgusting! She turned to me. What the hell? I sighed, closed my eyes, and put a palm to my throbbing forehead. Fantasy, he's all we've got, and I need to know how to get into your bonus room. She still had a lip curled at Erlene, who was dancing in a small circle, flapping his hands like a bird's wings, singing a warped version of Pretty Woman.
Where'd you get him?
She asked. Vree. She was trying to help. Erlene was still bird dancing and singing. He was attracting an audience. I kicked him in his other shin. Take it down a notch, Erlene.
How are you going to get there?
She asked. Erlene perked an ear.
My chariot awaits, fair lady. I'll take you anywhere, everywhere, the moon. Moon over Miami, bad moon rising, fly me to the moon.
I wouldn't go to a landfill with you, Fantasy said.
She pulled her keys out of her pocket and asked me,
Are you okay to drive the truck?
I nodded.
You're sure?
I held out my hand.
Get him in and out as quickly as possible.
I grabbed Erlene by the seersucker. To Fantasy, he yelled over his shoulder,
Until we meet again, tall maiden!
I didn't drive much. I didn't leave the Bellissimo property often, and when I did, I rode in the back seat of a Bellissimo town car, and my driver, Crisp, well, drove. I turned the key in the ignition of Fantasy's truck. And with that simple act, it shot forward 3 feet, leaving half an inch of air between the front end and a concrete parking bollard. Erlene slapped around for a seatbelt.
I drive, he said, but I had a few nips on the way this morning.
You drink and drive, Erlene?
Past tense, he said. I drunk and drove. I don't anymore. Now I drink and ride. My nurse, Jenna Ray, is also my driver.
Jenna Ray is here? In Biloxi? Had I known, I'd have her in the truck. She wasn't even a registered nurse, but knew more about health care in her sleep than Erlene knew at 8 in the morning after a pot of strong coffee.
Oh, a sinner of the worst sort.
Erlene's jowls shook with disapproval.
A loose woman, a gossipmonger, and it would seem an addicted gambler, too. She's somewhere in the bowels of your casino, donating her life savings to the one-armed bandits, no doubt.
And this horrible sinner, Jenna Ray, drives you around. Why?
My authorization is in question.
Your authorization to drive? Do you mean you lost your license, Erlene?
A bone I pick with your father daily.
Let me get this straight. I put the truck in reverse, remembering to engage the clutch that time, but let it go too soon. We shot 10 feet back, kissing the bumper of a Gulf Coast laundry truck.
Lord, help!
Erlene crossed himself.
Our Father, God bless us, everyone.
I put it in D and lurched forward. Erlene gripped the dash with both hands. Explain this to me, Erlene. Daddy arrested you for driving under the influence. You lost your license to drive, but you still practice medicine? Maneuvering the parking lot, I was getting the hang of the truck, which was to say I didn't plow into anything, and thank goodness, because Bianca would have a cow if I showed up at the dog judge's table wearing a whiplash collar.
I don't practice medicine, Davis. I excel at it.
Whatever. Navigating Beach Boulevard traffic was tricky, and I was honked at heartily from all directions.
How far are we going?
Erlene asked.
Is the Raving Beauty's home within walking distance? Walking is the medicine of life, you know, and it occurs to me I need a dose. Walk this way, walk the line, a little walk on the wild side.
We only have 2 turns left, Erlene, and the Raving Beauty is 20 years younger than you, 1 foot taller, and married.
What a lucky man.
Erlene smacked his lips.
Those long brown legs.
We finally made it to Fantasies. The security door to the bonus room was wide open. Doris Harrington's body was gone. In its place, Bootsy Howard's dog-eared book, The Tale of the Body Thief, by Anne Rice. Bootsy had the dead woman. She'd cooked up a new plan that involved the body and returned for it. Either she had witchcraft business with it, or the dead woman was Bootsy's new bargaining chip, which she intended to sell to me for $1 million. Great. Just great. Jenna Ray, Erlene's scandalous chauffeur, was nowhere to be found. She didn't answer her phone, a zip through the main casino didn't turn her up, and neither did a loudspeaker page. I didn't have time to track her through the surveillance system, nor did I have time to babysit Erlene until she surfaced. So I checked him into a Bellissimo guest room, telling him to wait there, quietly, until it was time for him to go. He asked when that might be, and I said as soon as I found Jenna Ray. He said he was in no big hurry. I told him his patients in Pineapple needed him. He asked when he'd see Tall, Dark, and Gorgeous again. Dinner, perhaps? I said he'd see her never, then pointed him to the guest room's minibar and ran. To July's, on the 25th floor,
where I gathered Bex and Quinn, telling July I'd bring them back in an hour. The girls and I rode the VIP elevator to the mezzanine level, where I waited at the back door of snacks for a to-go picnic lunch for three. The waitress asked me what we'd like, and I was so tired of making decisions, I told her to think Lunchables. The girls and I played the quiet game through our front door on our way to the playroom, sneaking in without Vree knowing I'd returned. I wasn't ready to share the latest devastating development, or reminding Bex and Quinn of Princess, who was probably busy with Madeline Albright anyway. I spread a quilt on the playroom floor, then watched the girls trade squares of peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, stack orange slices, and blow milk bubbles through straws. In the quiet safety and haven of the playroom, I reminded myself I didn't have anything to do with Doris Harrington's death or disappearance. That was all Bootsy. Then I dialed my sister. I didn't want to drag her into it, but at that point I had to. Are you comfortable? Are you kidding, Davis? This hotel is as nice as yours, and you should see this dog. She has her own bed, her own blanket, crystal food bowls, and every 2 hours a pet concierge takes her for a walk in the pet park. She has her own room service menu from a restaurant downstairs called the Barkery. Bubblicious. In the excess of dogs, 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 and more dogs, I'd forgotten Vree's. I sent her to the spa yesterday. Four Seasons has a dog spa. It's so cute. If Vree saw it, she'd move here. Meredith, I've lost Bootsy Howard. Bex and Quinn said, boo, boo, boo. What? Meredith said. Under what circumstances did you have Bootsy Howard to lose her? She showed up 10 minutes after I read the email from Gully Saturday morning. I went on to hit the highlights. I had to get her out of here, Mare. I couldn't think with her witching around. At the time, it seemed like a good idea to lock her up at Fantasies until I could trade her for you. But the next thing I knew, Fantasy's car was gone, there was a dead woman, and the housekeepers were missing. I think Bootsy Howard killed a woman and made off with two housekeeper hostages. For all I know, she might have killed them too if she didn't turn them into lizards. After the longest pause, Meredith said, Davis, have you been drinking? No. Start at the beginning. Slower this time. I went through it again in more detail. In the end, Meredith had three things to say. Why are you just now telling me this? And did you let Bex and Quinn have the carnival suckers? We've heard it all our lives, Davis. Skip Bootsy's house on Halloween and don't eat anything she brings to potluck unless it's straight out of a Kentucky Fried bucket. And why do you think the book in the chair was some kind of message from Bootsy? What if the dead woman had been sitting on the book the whole time? Meredith, what does it matter if the dead woman sat on a book? I'm going to prison for the rest of my life. My husband will divorce me, then my mother-in-law will move in and have my daughters in saddle Oxfords until they're old enough to run away from home. And you're defending Bootsy Howard? I'm not defending her. I'm just saying you're assuming a lot. I can't see Bootsy doing all that. She's odd, she's creepy, and there's no denying strange things happen when Bootsy's around, but kill a woman, make off with the body, and turn housekeepers into lizards? Well, when you put it that way. Where do you think she is? Meredith asked. I thought she was on her way there, but it looks like she turned around to come back here. She's either here, there, or somewhere in between, with a body strapped on the roof of Fantasy's car with housekeeper hostages, and I need to find her. Davis, this is horrible. Meredith, this is worse than horrible. How can I help? Get in touch with Gully. See if she's made contact. ask him if she's there or on her way. She's not. He calls me every hour on the hour. He says he's calling to pray with me, but he's really calling to make sure I haven't flown the coop. He hasn't said a word about Bootsy, except that he hasn't heard much from her. Between hospital visits with Green, he writes sermons. So far today, he's written, "Stop, drop, and roll doesn't work in hell," and, "If you would shut up, you could hear Jesus," and, "If you don't sin, he died for nothing."
Nice. Nervous energy, she said.
He's writing sermons to keep from writing his brother's eulogy.
What's Gina doing?
Praying out loud, very loud.
Anything about safe travels for Bootsy?
Just Green. If you could see him, you'd be praying out loud, too. He has so little time left, Davis. His skin is ghost gray, his lips are blue, his toenails are black.
I'd cover up those toenails.
I covered up my eyes.
When was the last time you saw him?
This morning, visiting hours from 10 until 10:20.
And Bootsy wasn't there.
10th time, Davis. Bootsy isn't here.
Where was that witchy woman?
Davis, you don't really believe she killed anyone, do you?
I don't know what to believe, I said. I know she helped kidnap you. I know she wants your blood pumping through her boyfriend's veins, and she wants it bad enough to have triggered a spiraling crime spree. If that's the case, there'll be no witching her way out of it, and I have to find her before anyone else gets hurt.
Meredith and I shared a moment of spooky sister silence.
She broke it.
Davis, do you feel bad about Mother and Daddy?
Of course I do. What if down the road our children kept something this big from us?
You know they will, she said. But in a way, don't you look at it like we're protecting them?
Mother would have a stroke. I don't know what Daddy would do. Lock Gully and Bootsy up, for sure.
Gully and Bootsy need to be locked up. If Bootsy's gone off the deep end and actually taken a life, yes. But not Gully so much. The only thing Gully is guilty of is trying to save his brother's life. And this is how far he's willing to go to do it.
An orange slice landed in front of me.
I'd do it for you, Davis.
Which put an entirely different spin on things. Because I'd do it for her, too. In a heartbeat, I looked at my own daughters, willing them to love each other the same way. At 2 o'clock, I tiptoed out my front door and returned Bexley and Quinn to July. On the short ride from the 29th floor to the 25th, they fell asleep. Quinn, then Bex. I kissed their warm blonde curls goodbye. Passed them one at a time to July, who kissed their warm blonde curls hello. I knew one thing Nashville didn't have. July. Another thought that flew through my brain as I parked the girls' double stroller to the left of July and Baylor's door. I'd have to take Bex and Quinn with me to the cage count at 4 that afternoon. Because the stroller would be the only way to get out with the money. No, I'd have to think of something else. I couldn't let my daughters watch me steal $1 million. 14. There was no avoiding Vree when I walked back in my own door 5 minutes later. I had less than an hour before my blind date with the oil sheik, and I needed to spend it online, which meant my office, and there was no other path to my office than through the doggy daycare that was my living room. And I wasn't trying to dodge her so much as I didn't have time. Saying good morning to Vree took until afternoon. Asking about lunch took until dinner. She could talk about sunset till sunrise. I caught a break,
They were asleep, Vree on one end of the sofa, Harley on the other, and Princess was snoring in the patched playpen. I tiptoed. First, I checked the three phones on my desk, my two, original and cloned, and Bootsy's confiscated phone. I had a text message from Bradley about eye drops. What? I put on my everything here is just fine hat and dialed. His phone immediately went to voicemail. Before I could leave a message, another text dinged in. I'm in a responsible gaming awareness breakout session. So far, nothing I haven't heard before. Davis, my eyes are red and they itch. The only thing they have in the lobby shop are Blink Better eye drops, which I've never heard of. How are you and the girls? Blink Better? I'd never heard of it either. I Googled. They were lubricating drops for contact lens wearers, of which Bradley wasn't. Don't get the Blink Better drops. What's wrong with your eyes? Is it one eye or both eyes? If it's one eye, maybe you scratched it? Accidentally? Do you need to go to an eye doctor? We're fine. The girls are being little angels. We miss you. From him, I don't need to go to a doctor. It's just irritating. Both eyes. It's probably the 1,000-watt LED lights all over this hotel. Me. So your eyes don't hurt outside? Him. Now that you bring it up, they're worse outside, although that might be the humidity. Me. Bradley. First the sneezing, now your eyes. Either you're coming down with something, or you and Nashville aren't a good match. Him. This session is ending. On my way to the next. Talk later. I love you, Davis. I rubbed my eyes. There was nothing on the surface of the internet about Hiridi Al-Abbasov. And by nothing, I meant not one thing. No Facebook, no Instagram, no Snapchat. I couldn't find public records of a deed in his name, a divorce, or a DUI. Either the man lived an unusually quiet life, or obscure immigration laws allowed him to keep his business to himself. A deeper dig netted me the basics. He was 40 years old, single, a graduate of Riverdale Academy for the Blind in Buckhead, a suburb of Atlanta, where he'd been an international boarding student from the age of 11. He was granted dual citizenship at age 21. He had a BBA in financial analysis from the University of Georgia, Go Dogs, and an MBA from Harvard Business School, Go Harvard's. He was president of the United States operations of Source Oil Petroleum, producing the equivalent of 2 million barrels of oil per day. Impressive. But all facts. No insight. Nothing that would give me an edge. I didn't know if I'd need one, but always be prepared. I was on my way to his bellissimo portfolio. We'd have some dirt on him. When a text hit my phone from No Hair. Do you and or Fantasy have the cage covered? I replied with shaking thumbs. Yes. Unnerved by being reminded of what I had ahead of me, I clicked the wrong casino marketing tab. Instead of searching for Al-Abbasov specifically, I pulled up the in-house VIP list. Available to casino management. Hosts, pit bosses, and floor supervisors, the in-house VIP list was a who's who of current guests ranked by importance, either fame or fortune. Which would work because Al-Abbasov, at 2 million barrels of oil per day, would surely be at the top of the list. But he wasn't. He was in the number two spot. We had a guest with more money than Al-Abbasov? We did. Their names were Cleavon and Candy Smucker. Who? Smucker? As in schmucks? Were these the people causing so much trouble? Curiosity got the better of me. I clicked on their joint portfolio. The smuckers weren't 10th-generation jelly money. They were lottery winners. Cleavon and Candy of Marietta, Georgia, another suburb of Atlanta, won a record-shattering $1.7 billion with the single-winning Mega Millions lottery ticket purchased less than a mile from their mobile home 10 months earlier. Good grief. I couldn't help myself. I took a quick look, and there they were with a big check and their yellow-eyed dog, Princess. I didn't see or hear Fantasy until she was standing beside me tapping her watch. I was too busy being appalled by the wealth of information, both personal and financial, in front of me.
"Are you on Facebook?" Fantasy asked. "What are you doing? Watching someone decorate meatloaf? We have to be next door in 2 minutes."
I tilted the screen. It was a close-up of Princess Smucker, yellow eye blazing, crooked teeth bared. Candy had captioned it, "Guard Dog."
"You found her owners?"
I clicked Candy Smucker's profile picture. Fantasy said,
"She's the naked dancer. That's the woman who was dancing on a craps table in red panties. She's one of the schmucks. Her husband is the other."
We scrolled and found everything. By everything, I meant every single thing. Candy Smucker documented her life, her whole life, in images and narrative, on social media, every thought that passed through her brain, every bite of food she consumed, every move she made, and every penny she spent. Candy's video library was endless, and all the same show. Princess guarding a bag of Cheetos, a Cadillac CT6, or the husband, Cleavon. Candy pointed, said,
"Guard!"
then laughed hysterically as wild-eyed Princess got her warrior on. Candy's last post was 10 minutes earlier from the high-stakes room of the casino, where she'd taken a selfie with a $500 Olay Jalapenos hot and spicy slot machine. The caption she wrote above her pouting face was, "This slot's took my 70 thou. I'm fixin' to get Cleve to shoot it. JK, our guns are in the room." We scrolled through Candy's life quickly, but came to a screeching halt at a post from 2 weeks earlier, when Candy made a worldwide web appeal to her 5,000-plus followers for a bodyguard-slash-dog-sitter to accompany them to the Bellissimo Resort and Casino. "We are taking big $$$$ to the casinos, and we need somebody to go with us to watch it and take care of Miss Priss. I pay good." The applications for temporary employment in the comments below the job offer post went on and on and on. It looked as if half of Facebook's 2 billion subscribers wanted to accompany Cleavon and Candy Smucker to the Bellissimo and watch their $$$$$ signs. It had been shared to other Facebook walls more than 1,600 times. At the very end of the feed, for all the world to see, Candy struck a deal with the brothers Sebastian, Butch and Brutus. I clicked on Brutus Sebastian's name. Facebook took me to his personal page. I knew him. He was one of the missing housekeepers. His brother Butch was the other. Those men weren't housekeepers.
They were bodyguards slash dog sitters. Did Cleve and Candy Smucker send them to my home to check up on their dog? On me? Were the Smuckers that paranoid? And what kind of bodyguards intercepted internal work orders and impersonated housekeepers? Were they former CIA operatives? Bradley was right. Our world was too dangerous to raise children in. I let those men in my home. Then I sent them to Fantasies, where they met Bootsy Howard. If I hadn't had Bootsy's phone, I'd have called her and said, "Have your way with the fake housekeeper's boots. When you're finished with them, send them my way." We scrolled to see the employment contract, including time, place, and salary details. Anything and everything the world might want to know. Posted above a picture we hadn't seen yet. It was Princess gnawing her purple leg, sporting her new Harry Winston dog collar. Candy's comment accompanying the shot was, "Ain't Miss Priss' new necklace cute? It oughta be. I paid $2 million for it." I looked at Fantasy.
"What, Davis?"
"Princess had that collar on when she got here."
"She did not."
"She did. We ran." Princess's collar wasn't in her red duffel bag or anywhere else in the small guest bedroom, and we tossed it good.
"Is there any chance Vree put it back on her? Could she be wearing it?"
"I don't know, Fantasy. I try not to look at her." I was halfway under one of the twin beds. The last time I remember seeing it was when I took it off her, and that was in here.
"How did you not know it was a Harry Winston?"
Fantasy was stripping the other twin bed. "How could I have known it was? What dog in the world wears a Harry Winston collar?" I crawled to the closet on my hands and knees, checking every square inch of carpet on the way.
"Well, it's not here."
Fantasy had the first ruined pop-and-play flipped over, banging it.
"And who drops off a dog wearing a $2 million collar with total strangers?"
"Crazy rich people," I said. "That's who."
"Schmucks,"
she said. We ran back to the living room. Vree and Harley were still asleep. Princess was busy with Madeline Albright. No collar.
"Vree!"
Fantasy snapped her fingers in her face.
"Nap's over! Get up!"
Vree startled.
"What?"
She sat straight up.
"Gooch, is that you? Bubs, where am I? Are we on fire?"
I checked my watch. We were already 15 minutes late to our chic meeting, which meant we were 45 minutes from cage count. Time was slipping away. "Vree," I said, "we have to go. We have a meeting. You need to wake up and find Princess's collar."
"Her what?" "Her collar, Vree,"
Fantasy said.
"You know, her dog collar, the one that goes around her neck." "The rhinestone collar?"
"That's the one." And those weren't rhinestones. I turned for the front door. "Find it, Vree. We have to find it. We'll be back as soon as we can. I have my phone with me. Text me as soon as you have the collar in your hands."
"But where am I supposed to look? I mean, Davis, this is a big house."
"She's only been in a few of the rooms," I said. "Look everywhere she's been. Please, Vree, this is important." 1 minute later, huffing and puffing, I knocked on the Leno suite door. Fantasy was tugging her blouse, fanning herself.
"It's a good thing this man can't see,"
she whispered.
"Because you look like you've been digging ditches, Davis."
I smoothed my hair just as Hiridi Alabasov opened the door. It had to be him. His $2,000 Tom Ford sunglasses gave him away. Our mouths dropped open. He was baseball and apple pie. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't what I got.